Our next topic is the theme of Kuli. Mulk Raj Anand's themes, broadly speaking, consist of poverty, exploitation, class consciousness, racial relations, capitalism, industrialism, communalism, racism, hunger, etc. Anand is a novelist of the underprivileged sections of Indian society. In Kuli and Two Leaves and a Bud, there is a orchestration of themes mentioned above. Kuli is the Odissi of Munu, an orphaned village boy from the Kangra hills who sets out in search of a livelihood. His several roles include working as a domestic servant in an urban middle-class family in Shamnagar, as a worker in a pickle factory and a coolie in the bazaar in Daulatpur, as a laborer in a cotton mill in Bombay, and as a rickshaw puller in an Anglo-Indian household in Shimla, a job the rigors of which bring on swift consumption and an untimely death. In the words of Professor M. K. Nayak, the central theme of the novel is the tragic denial to a simple landless peasant of the fundamental right to happiness. The terrible destiny of being a victim of exploitation is indeed Munu's dubious birthright. He had heard of how the landlord had seized his father's 5 acres of land because the interest on the mortgage covering the unpaid rent had not been forthcoming when the rains had been scanty and the harvest bad. And he knew how his father had died a slow death of bitterness and disappointment and left his mother a penniless beggar to support a child in arms. Page 6. Before he begins his inglorious odyssey, Munu is a sensitive and intelligent boy, full of high spirits and a zest for life. He was genius at climbing trees. He would hop on to the trunk like a monkey, climb the bigger branches on all fours, swing himself to the thinner offshoots as if he were dancing on a trapeze, and then, diving dangerously into space, he would jump from one tree to another. Poverty compels Munu to be apprenticed, apprenticed, to life at the age of 14. His expectations are extremely modest. The world is not his oyster, and he wields no sword with which to open it. His only prayer is, I want to live, I want to know, I want to work. Page 183. His first encounter with the urban world is in the house of Babu Nathuram, sub-accountant, Imperial Bank, Shamnagar. He starts on the wrong foot since an early fox pass committed in total ignorance of urban ways. He relieves himself near the wall of the house, brands him as a stupid rustic oaf. The lady of the house, B.V. Uttam Kaur, a snobbish and suspicious termagant, underfeeds, hacks and humiliates him. All this, however, fails to dampen his high spirits completely, and it is finally this living vitality and irrepressible impetuosity which drives him away from the house, as while playing he accidentally injures the small daughter of BVG. Before he runs away from Shamnagar, Munu has learnt his first lessons in the harsh school of the modern urban world. He realized finally his position in the world. He was to be a slave, a servant who should do the work, all the odd jobs, someone to be abused, even beaten. Page 33. He was condemned by an iniquitous system always to remain small, abject, and drab. Page 37. There must be only two kinds of people in the world, the rich and the poor. Page 56. But the Shyamnagar episode is only the first act in the tragic drama of exploitation. It is his stint at the Sir George White cotton mills in Bombay that exposes Munnu to the full force of the modern capitalistic machine. The factory is a huge octopus with its numerous tentacles clutching the laborer in its deadly grasp, slowly paralyzing and poisoning him. The British management offers no security of tenure and effects retrenchment summarily. The British foreman is at once the requiting authority, a landlord who rents out ramshackle cottages at exorbitant rent, and also a money lender, all rolled into one. The Pathan doorkeeper practices usury with even more drastic methods. The Sikh merchant puts his monopoly as the authorized dealer in the mill workers' colony to full personal advantage. The ill-paid, ill-housed, undernourished, and bullied laborer is broken both in body and mind, as Munnu finds his friend Hari is, though his own youthful vitality saves him from this ultimate faith. The third and final act of Munno's tragedy commences when Mrs. Mainwaring, whose car knocks him down, takes him to Shimla, as he wants a servant, his own wishes in the matter being of course of no consequence. A deep-rooted feeling of inferiority to the superior people who lived in bungalows and wore and greasy clothes, page 257, makes him accept without murmur his lot as a rickshaw puller, as a result of which he dies of consumption at the age of 16. Capitalism and industrialism are not the only forces which exploit Munnu and his like. Communalism too lends a hand. A workers' strike is easily broken by casual rumors of communal disturbances which divert the wrath of the laborers from the mill to the religious factions among themselves. The fires of communal hatred are further fanned by politicians who have their own axes to grind. In the whole process, the exploited laborers loses his job, his livelihood, and sometimes even his life. The social panorama against which Munnu moves gives Anand an opportunity to deal with a cognate theme, viz. The relationship between the Indians and the British in pre-independence days, a relationship in which the element of exploitation is mixed with prejudices, misunderstandings, and inhibitions on both sides. Sir Reginald White, president of the cotton mill, Mr. Little, the manager, and Jimmy Thomas, the foreman, are exploiters pure and simple. Mrs. Mainwaring shows a different aspect of this relationship. An Anglo-Indian, she is a house divided against itself. The passionate blood of her pagan Indian grandmother in her being at perpetual war with the European, Christian horror of the flesh and sex instilled into her by her convent schooling. She compassionates for her strong inferiority complex by striving to appear as a true blue British lady. Mr. England, chief cashier of the Imperial Bank of India, Shamnagar, typhoids the average British reaction to the Indian in those days. He is embarrassed by the obsequiousness of his subordinate Babunathu Ram and his visit to the latter's house, where he is invited to tea, turns out to be a social disaster owing to woeful ignorance of each other's ways on the part of both. In Daulatpur, Rai Bahadur, Sir Todar Mal, retired public prosecutor, exhibits the same embarrassing obsequiousness in dealing with Dr. Edward Major Ribanks, the public health officer. In Bombay, Screwwala, the Indian clerk in the cotton mill, cowers before Mr. Little because he had never felt quite at ease with white men ever since one had kicked him at the corner of Hornby Road for no other crime than the childish curiosity which had made him stare with wonder and admiration at the Sahib. Page 213. Anand's treatment of his themes in Kuli again shows how as an untouchable he is at his best when he observes keenly, describes realistically and with unflinching honesty what he observes and maintains his balance even when his compassion and indignation clamor for expression. The picture of the dirt and squalor in which the factory workers live is done with unsparing detail. Perhaps the finest touch is the scene where Munnu and Hari with his family are seeking a night's shelter on the crowded pavements of Bombay. They find some open space by the doorsteps of a shop surprisingly unclaimed by anyone, though every available shelter around has already been occupied by coolies and vagabonds. The mystery is explained by a half-naked woman who sits mourning there and tells him, "My husband died there last night." Hari's response is typical of his situation. He has attained the release. He tells her, "We will rest in her place. We are not afraid of ghosts." Page 149. This rustic realism recalls Thomas Hardy at his best. With exploitation and misery go hand in hand, the moments of joy and happiness, though short. Treatment given to Munnu by Seth Prabhu Dayal and his high-souled wife, kind-hearted friendship with Hari, and delightful moments spent with Hari's wife, a Sunday evening with Pyari Jan, which is a delightful idyll full of dance, drink and music, kind treatment given to Munnu by Mrs. Mainwaring when he is ill, are the moments of silver lining in the dark clouds of his life. Nevertheless, the theme of the exploitation of the underprivileged is presented in depth in Kuli, and the picture is drawn with vividness. With its scene shifting from the Kangra Hills down to the plains of Bombay and back to the Punjab Hills, with its crowded canvas covering all the classes of society, from the landless peasant to the aristocratic Anglo-Indian and British, and with its varied spectacle of human nature, ranging from the malevolent to the saintly coolie, has an almost epic quality, though the period of time it covers is as short as 2 years. In spite of this, the novel is not as unqualified a success as Untouchable is. So all the themes presented in Kuli converge on one single point of focus, which is the central theme of the novel. It concerns Munnu's tragic end. He is not given chances of living, though he has a zest for life. That is why the social pressures make him a man of broken body and spirit. He dies at the age of 16 years. The central theme of the novel is the tragic denial to a simple and landless peasant of the fundamental right to happiness. Munnu is an innocent child who might grow into a man of potentialities, but who is nipped in the bud. He is the victim of social forces. This tragic denial of life to Munnu is caused by his poverty. Poverty is the sole cause of his tragedy. It is his tragic flaw. Class consciousness is the main theme of the novel. Whether there were more rich or more poor people, there seemed to be only two kinds of people in the world. Caste did not matter. The Babus are like the Sahib logs, and all servants look alike. There must only be two kinds of people in the world, the rich and the poor, and between the two there is no connection. The rich and the powerful, the magnificent and the glorious, whose opulence is built on robbery and theft and open warfare, are honored and admired by the whole world and by themselves. You, the poor and the humble, you, the meek and the gentle wretches that you are, swindled out of your rights and broken in body and soul, you are respected by no one and you do not respect yourselves. Page 265. The theme of a contrast between the rural world and the urban one is also present in Kuli. The first chapter depicts the world of village life, where people are full of romantic visions regarding the city life. However, the reality is grim. When Daya Ram leaves him behind at the house of Babunathu Ram, Munnu realizes the tragedy of the situation. He comes to know fully the urban world of bogus sophistication when he relieves himself outside the walls of the house of Uttam Kaur. Munnu then realizes the difference between the urban and the rural worlds, as he has been humiliated by Uttam Kaur for his misdeed. He was hungry. He expected that his new master or mistress would offer him good food when he first meets him or her. But he is disappointed when he is made to work hard from the very first moment he enters the house and is not given food till very late. He had thought that he would be able to sit down when he reached his destination, and that he would be given food according to the custom which prevails in all Indian homes of offering food to guests and visitors at whatever time of the day they arrive. Instead, he was being asked to go on an errand the very minute he arrived. Perhaps the customs in the town are different, he thought, with a sinking feeling. As is clear from the story, Munu escapes from destitution by death. He is a victim of urban India as it was in the British Raj. The theme of Kuli is over.